got good that time of worship was and is for me already this morning. Just a personal word, you know, it seems like when I'm going through things, and I'm always going through stuff, I find a way to always be in stuff. But especially when we're going through some tough stuff, I just find it so good to be with God's people. I haven't been emotional yet, really, about the stuff with Kate and my dad and the stuff that's going on, really, except when I'm with y'all. You think, I do everything backwards. But I think it's because I'm most myself when I'm with the body of Christ. When I'm surrounded by God's presence, I think is when I'm most me. That's my identity. And it's our identity as the children of God. So it just, you know, I understand it, but it does frustrate me when I hear people say, well, we're just going through some stuff right now, so we hadn't been there lately. Isn't that when we're supposed to be together? I think it is. So please keep that in mind. If you don't need to be here, somebody else probably needs you to be. And I think that's when we most need to be. So thank you. And Clay, thank you for leading us in that worship. We pick up, in a sense, where we left off last week. We left Paul just about to be killed in chapter 22. Technically, we went through verse 29. So as they're leading him out, Paul's still trying to give a witness. He's been told not to come, right? In verses, chapter 22, verse 30, everything's happening so far exactly the way the prophets had told him it would, and the way that his people who loved him said, Paul, if you go, you're going to be arrested. And Paul was saying, basically, right, and I'm supposed to go, not only to Jerusalem, but also to Rome. God has revealed this to me. And so he's been headstrong about it in a good, positive way. He's been committed to go and did not stop short of what God's called him to do. The tribune from last week's study, who's kind of tasked with keeping Paul and the whole everybody safe and there in the temple, and that's what he's trying to do, is carry out justice, and he's trying to figure out what exactly is going on. He's brought Paul before the council of religious leaders, the Sanhedrin, to learn why they have these charges against him. What is it you're trying to, you know, as an outsider and being objective, having an objective point of view, he's basically saying, I don't get it. Why are you trying to kill this man? Is it about some little point of your law, or what exactly is it? Because I can't see it. He seems to me to be a good man, is what it sounds like he's trying to say. And yet, why are you so angry? Why are you about to rip him apart, literally, right here in front of everybody in the temple? So the first thing Paul declares is his innocence and his conscience before God, chapter 23, verse 1. Right? So verse 30 of chapter 22, he says, but the next day, desiring to know the real reason, he's being accused by the Jews, he unbound him, and he commanded the chief priests and all the council to meet. And he brought Paul down and he set him before him, and he's saying, what's going on here? And so Paul, again, picks right up on his story, right up on his testimony, and looking intently at the council, the people that he used to work shoulder to shoulder with in doing the very thing they're doing, remember? These are witnesses because of Paul's testimony, because Paul, as he said last week, if you don't believe what I'm saying and you don't know me, ask your leaders, because I was one of them and I was doing what they're doing to me, to others, and thought I was right. They can tell you that what I'm telling you is true. I am a persecutor, was a persecutor of Christians, just as you are now doing. And they know exactly the change in me. And that's what he's been really being brought up for. So Paul declares his innocence and says, my conscience is clear before God. Now that's a bold statement, I realize. But he's saying, basically, I've tried to do what God's led me to do. No, he's not perfect, all right? But this statement brings this immediate resurgence of violence from the people, right? They from the high priest. The high priest commands the man beside him to slap him in the mouth. And Paul bows up like any good redneck would, right? He said, how dare you slap me? And he basically put something on him. But he's being justified. I think that's just natural for false testimony. I'm not saying, I mean, from his personality. I'm not saying that it's right necessarily, but remember, it's so much like Jesus was in being innocent and yet being slapped like that in the same way when he was brought before some of these same people in John chapter 18. So Paul responds with a rebuke of his own and says, you've always, just like the prophet Ezekiel said, verse chapter 13, verse 10, in verse 3 there, he says, you've always done this. The prophet was right. You've always stood up against God. And God's going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. You sit here judging me. And then he calms back down and he humbles down. It kind of makes amends there. So that's kind of catching us up with what's going on. But, you know, it really becomes clear that Paul's safety is in danger, and this group gets just crazy again, literally crazy, just out of their head almost, caught up in this mob behavior. The tribune has him removed, has to take him away. Verse 10, he returns into prison, but that's not the end of the story, is it? That night, while Paul is there in prison, he experiences the presence of Jesus. This is going to happen four or five other times, and has already happened a time or two, where Jesus himself has appeared to Paul and said, Paul, remember what I told you. Remember what I've caused you to do. Remember that I'm with you. I mean, he's giving him this encouragement. And what I want you to see, friends, is that we can count on the same encouragement in our lives. We all need it. If Paul needed it, how much more do we need it? In verse 11 is the verse I want us to really focus on right now. Pick up with me in verse 6. Now, when Paul had received that one part where the Sadducees, Paul had perceived that one part where the Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out to the council, brothers, I'm a Pharisee of Pharisees, son of Pharisees. It is with respect to the hope and the resurrection of the dead that I'm on trial. And when he had said this, the dissension arose, and then the Sadducees believed in him, the Pharisees didn't, and they were going back and forth at each other here. The Sadducees said there is no resurrection, the Pharisees do. And Paul was just kind of, I think he was basically saying, you know, these people hate each other so much. They don't just hate me, they hate each other. He just kind of throws a bone between them and lets them fight over it. He says, you know, take the attention off myself here for a minute. Let them fight each other. And they do that, and then it just becomes more of a bloodbath. So they basically saying, one saying we don't see anything wrong, the other one's saying we do. So he takes him back to the barracks there in verse 10. In verse 11, the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, now just don't miss that. The Lord Jesus stood beside him and said, take courage. For as you have testified to the fact about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify. You must testify also in Rome. Now we want to break that down. And we'll catch up with the plot and the result of that in just a minute. But this statement, this is really an incredible statement. But what I want us to focus on is how much we all need encouragement. We all need it. And especially those times when we're trying to do the right thing, and it's hard to understand why is it working out this way. And this can be difficult for all of us at times, right? But we can count on the assurance and the testimony, the encouragement of the Lord. Here's a story that I want to share with you that another pastor shared. And some of you don't even know who Dear Abby is, do you? The columnist in the paper, Dear Abby. Some of you young ones don't. A few. We don't have that many really that young this morning. But Dear Abby, the columnist, she's passed along now. But here's a retired teacher shared with Dear Abby. This is probably back in the 60s or 70s, I'm guessing. This has been a while, but it's a powerful story, I think. This shows how important encouragement is. A teacher shared with Dear Abby an incident from many years earlier when she was teaching junior high school, which today would be middle school, for those of you who don't remember Dear Abby and don't know what junior high school is. The class had worked hard on a new concept all week, and the students that were obviously stressed. And to take a break, the teacher asked the students to take out a sheet of paper and to write down the names, write down the names of the other students in her class, and leaving a space between each name. She told them, now, I want you in that space to write down the nicest thing that you can think of to say for each of the classmates. This is a day when you could actually trust kids to do that. not turn it into a horror story. She collected the papers, and that weekend, she wrote the name of each student on a separate piece of paper, followed by what all the students had said about that person. What a great idea. On Monday, she gave each student his or her list, and before long, she said, everybody in the class was smiling. Everybody. She said she ever heard one student whisper, I never knew that that meant anything to anyone, that little thing that they mentioned. I didn't know anybody liked me that much. And she heard similar things coming from different ones. They smiled. Years later, the teacher had to attend a funeral of one of those students in that class, a very promising young man who'd been killed in Vietnam. The church was packed with so many people, the young man's friends, and many of them had been in that same junior high math class in that small town. After the funeral, she went back to the parents' home just to speak to them and to be with them. And the parents said to the teacher, if you have a minute, we want to show you something. Our son had this on him in his wallet when he was killed. The father pulled out that list of all the good things that the boy's classmates had said about him. He said, we want to thank you so much for doing that. And the mother said, as you can see, it was among his treasured possessions. He always hung on to it. We had no idea it even existed. And as a group of those former classmates heard that exchange, one smiled kind of sheepishly and said, I still have my list. It's in the top drawer, the top of my desk drawer at home. Another one said, I've got mine too. It's in my diary. Another one said, I put mine in my wedding album. I bet we all saved them, another one said. And someone said, I carry mine with me all the time, just like you did. One by one, they all said, that one simple act of hearing those encouraging words is something I've carried with me my whole life. As Marion said, not everybody grew up in prayer. Not everybody grew up in a home where you got a lot of encouragement. I get it. But instead of pulling back and saying, I'm not going to worship because I had a bad home life, can you see again the opposite side of that is how much more precious is the encouragement and the positive word from the Lord and the fatherly love of the Lord and the loving arms of his people to those who don't know it and have not made it a common thing, but it still stands out as being something special and to be treasured? Friends, he is the Lord who encourages his people. Jesus is. Always. Paul was a great man. I think he was one of the strongest men that I know of through history. I admire him as much as anybody. But he was still a man. And there were still times where it was hard and it was weak. And he had feelings. He needed to know that God was with him. And it's clear to me at the end of all of his book, at least at the end of all of the letters that he writes in the New Testament, how much time he spends giving personal thanks and also asking for personal prayers for individuals. And he comments on who was with him and who's not with him anymore and says, pray for them and tell so-and-so this and tell so-and-so that. I know you have to bring my coat when you come. And those personal things, because I can't count on anybody but you. Those little personal words from a powerful man, that encouragement was important to him to have those people around him because, again, I think they were the encouragement of the Lord to him. But also, he needed sometimes there was nobody there with him because of the stand he was taking. And that's the case today. So I just want us to break down verse 11 and then show the result of what happened afterwards in those next few verses. So just stick with me for a second here. First of all, what I want you to see is, and this isn't said in a word, it's not one phrase in there, but what's obvious in this thing is that the Lord does stand by us. The Lord does stand by us. He did Paul, he does us. Paul was not, again, on some special plane. Yes, he was a committed Christian and he was sold out for Jesus. But we can be as well. He had the same access to the same relationship that we all do. And we all get to experience so many of the things that Paul did. Maybe not on the same level, but God's, again, it's not always balanced out to say, well, I'm only going to do these things for the people who deserve it. But friends, in a sense, it is really those who were in the fight, those who were struggling to do God's will, those who have made that commitment, that really get to experience it. Now, I'm not saying that God's not with us when we do stupid things. Thank goodness he is. But there is a difference. You get that, right? And I'm not saying that he didn't show up to me at times in my sin, especially in those years of rebellion. I'm not saying there were times where he made himself extremely clear to me and personal to me in those times and made it clear that it had nothing to do with the life I was living, but the plans he had for me in the future. And I can tell you several of those instances, and I've shared them over the years, of how he did do that in a way that I didn't understand until years later what he was even talking about. But I do know that God shows up for all of us at times, and especially for those of us who, and let this be an encouragement to you, those who were going through difficult circumstances because of him, because of taking a stand, because of being a witness, because of coming under persecution, then we need to know that God's going to be with us, and we need to know and recognize and look for him when we're in those times. I say that believing that he's not going to let you down. The Lord didn't need to send out, first of all, he knows. He didn't need to send out a team of angels to say, can you find out what's going on with Paul? I mean, obviously, that's even, it sounds sarcastic to even say it, right? But let that be the point, that he knew exactly what Paul was going through. He knew exactly what he was feeling. He knew exactly what he was going to do in spite of what these powerful people were saying. Someone who was powerful in the world who had the right to take his life. He could have done it as they did the life of Jesus. As Paul had been a part of taking the life of Stephen, and as they tried to kill him already, he knows, and the Lord knows exactly what's going on here, but he didn't need a team of angels to find out where Paul was. And notice, he didn't send an angel like he did at other times. He comes personally and stands beside Paul. And I don't think he was just standing there like, you know who I am? Straighten up, boy. Quit sniveling. I think it was so precious and tender. I don't know what it was, but I know what it's been like a couple of times in my life, and I can't even describe it to you really, other than I know there are times where I picture him holding me like a little boy who didn't have a clue in his lap and just saying, be still and quiet, just let me hold you. Times where I couldn't get a prayer together to save my life. One thing, because I was crying too hard, and the other thing was I didn't have a clue what was going on or what to say. I knew it was hard. And I knew it was hurting. But I knew that God had it at the same time. I can't explain how. Not because I was some great warrior for God, but because he did have a plan and a purpose for my life. And you've experienced, many of you, most of you, if not all of you, have experienced those times where you recognize that God was there in a very tender way, but a very powerful way to communicate encouragement to you during those difficult circumstances. He does it many ways, and he does it many times. But the Lord knows all of our difficult circumstances. He knows what you're going through right now. He knows why. And he knows the basis for it all. He knows the plans he has for you. And he knows that the enemy can only go as far as the Lord permits and no further. And I need to sometimes hear from God to say, Rodney, you don't even have an idea, because it's too wild for you to even be able to trust in right now. But I've got this. I have experienced that, where the stuff was flying, and I knew it was the basis of a prayer I'd prayed months before and asked him to shake things up in my life. He stopped me as I prayed it. He said, you mean it this time? Because every time I've ever tried to do it, when things get tough, you start wiring and running. So do you mean it this time? And I said, yes. And it brought about 2 years of some of the hardest stuff I've ever been through in my life. And doing it in the midst of it, as people came to me saying, Rodney, I'm so sorry. I had to say, I can't even explain to you how, but this is the answer to a prayer, and it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. So, and they kind of looked at me funny, but I said, I can't even tell you how. I just know God's got this, and this is the answer to a prayer that I prayed, and God's going to work it out. Friends, Isaiah 54:17 says, no weapon that is formed against you shall prosper. And every tongue that accuses you in judgment will condemn. You will condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord. And their vindication is from me, Jesus says, declares the Lord. That's Old Testament. But it was the Lord saying to them through the prophet, no weapon formed against you. I am God and I am sovereign and I have a purpose that is, you are invincible until it is accomplished. And we'll get back to that in a minute. But first of all, he knows. He knows every circumstance. And secondly, he's with us. The Lord stood at Paul's side. Maybe not physically. And I'm not telling you that he's going to come to you physically and you're going to see a vision of God. You may. But I think you can make it just as real, or even maybe more real than if you saw something where you convinced yourself, I couldn't have seen that. He makes it real. The Lord is present with us spiritually. And to say that, friends, that is not a cop-out. That is not to say, now don't expect a physical one, but he's going to give you second best. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying God is with you whether you see him physically or not. Most of the people who saw him physically were scared to death. I'm not sure I want to until I get to heaven and I'm prepared for it and fitted for it. Right, got the right kind of eyes to see it. But after Jesus has promised this over and over, it's not a cop-out. He's going to be with us, maybe not physically, but spiritually. What did he tell his disciples in the Great Commission? Go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to observe whatsoever things I've commanded you, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. What did he say? For lo, I'm not sure what that means. I don't think it means lo versus high. He's just saying, hey, because, hey, lo, yo, whatever you want to say. He's saying, hey, get this now. I'm with you. I think he's kind of saying, look at me when I look at me. Look at me. I'm not going to leave you. I am with you always. Don't forget it. Until this thing's wrapped up, I'm with you until you come to be with me. Don't you doubt it. Because he knew there were going to be times when they would doubt it. There were times where he needed encouragement of his Father. And the Father came to him and said, this is my Son, whom I'm well pleased. Jesus needed to hear that voice from his Father. We need to hear from Jesus. Hebrews 13, chapter 13, verses 5 through 6, promises, after exhorting us to have our way of life to be free from the love of money, he says, for he himself said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you, so that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What shall man do to me? He's reminded me of that verse so many times. What can men do to me? I mean, right now, what is the worst that could happen to me in this situation? If it all blew up in the worst case scenario in my head right now, where these people say, you don't have a job anymore, or they say, we're coming after your family, or they say, blah, 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 blah. Worst case scenario. That's come back to me so many times. What can they really do to you that I've already, what can they undo that I've done? What can they do to get to you through me? Do you trust me to be your shoulder defender? Do you trust me to be your Father who holds you? Do you trust me that I love you even when it doesn't make sense and I say jump and you don't know the bottom? Do you trust me to be God, to be good, to be great, to be powerful in your life? Trust me. You can trust me. But if the Lord speaks to us, thank goodness he's with us. And the Lord speaks to us. That's the second thing. The Lord speaks to us just the word we need to hear. Look at verse 11. The Lord stood by him, first of all. The second thing is, he says, take courage. The Lord stood by him and said. Just take that little phrase. And said. The Lord spoke to him. And I don't want to belabor the point, but friends, listen to what that means, really. Think about that. What a blessing it is to have God speak to us. How does God speak to you? What if you don't hear an audible voice? Is he still speaking? Of course he is. How does he do it? He might do it this morning through the sermon. He may do it through reading some of these verses. He might have done it this morning in your quiet time, but you weren't really cued, maybe. Or maybe you were. Maybe he's already done it. You could say, you're beating a dead horse here. I understand this because God did it just this morning or earlier this week or last year. At the very time I needed it the most, God spoke to me through a brother or a sister in the Lord. God spoke to me through a sunset I saw. God spoke to me. I've seen him speak through incredible things in my life in just very poignant ways, in very important ways, where he spoke to me so clearly through maybe some little scene that was just like, God just kind of zeroes in on it and you go, was that from me? Kate had one of those experiences last week. And it sounded kind of silly to me, but it's a cardinal. Somebody had just told her how important thoughts were, and she said, "You're not going to believe it, but this morning it's like God showed me this one little beautiful scene that helped me know He's got this." And her friend brought her a little cardinal bracelet that night because her father had had that experience that a cardinal was a word from the Lord. Again, I'm not saying there's anything scriptural about that. It was personal. Who was I to go, "It's kind of dumb, man. You thought God spoke to a cardinal? What if it was a hawk? Ooh, that's a big one." It was not for me to say. I just know He's spoken to me through so many little special things. And friends, He does. He speaks, and He speaks often. Think of the ways He's done it in Scripture. A burning bush. A donkey. Balaam's ass. Yes, that's in the Bible. I'll say it. I've got one. He's got a loud mouth too. He did it through handwriting on a wall. He's done it in the sky. Through signs in the skies, friends. He's done it through sermons and the ink on a page. He's done it through the voice of just common people where we've entertained angels unaware and God's spoken clearly and we didn't even know who these people were. Hebrews 1, verses 1 through 2 says, "Long ago and at many times in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, He's spoken to us by His Son, whom He appointed to be the heir of all things, through whom also He created the world. The Creator of the world, the Son of God, He says, is now the one who is speaking most clearly to us, our generation, the period we live in." He's saying it used to be through the prophets, but now we have hear Him through and see Him clearly, most clearly, through His Son. And when He appears to us in whatever form, it's an incredible thing. And He does do it, and He does it often. One thing, we miss it if we're not noticing for. Another thing, we miss it if we're not in the battle or not in the situation where we even need encouragement. Except for the times when we really mess up. And there's a difference. So Jesus said it many times during His earthly ministry. What does He say here? He says, "Take courage. Take courage." I mean, that's just saying encouragement. That's the spoken word of encouragement. But He's saying, "Sit up straight, Paul. Listen to what I'm telling you. You can't lose this. I've got you. I've got them. I've got this. Now, be courageous. Be encouraged. This is not on you. Yes, you need to listen, and yes, you need to be faithful, but I've got this." And when you know that, say, "Which way is hell? I'm fixing to go. Just give me my, just turn, point me towards it." You know? It's the same thing Jesus said over and over during His earthly ministry to so many. He said it to the sick of palsy. He said it to the woman with the blood disease. He said it during the storm to the disciples. Over and over He would say, I just can't help but think that they must have felt a hand on their shoulder at times and said, just give food. Be of good cheer. He's not saying, give me a good, you die here. But He's saying, just know, have courage and know, you can sit up straight. I've got this. You don't have to be bent down. And He does the same in our hearts, friends, from preaching to an encourager in your church, in your small group, through your private devotions, just the right message that leaps off the page at the right time. And you can't tell anybody else exactly why it's powerful. Anyone catch me the other day? But you know and see in their eyes what was communicated. People say, "Can God speak through dreams?" And they tell me their dream and say, "What do you think it says?" All I know to say is, "What did it say to you? What did it mean to you?" And maybe the only meaning it has. What did it mean to you? What do you think? He tells him, secondly, a message of commendation. He said, and he said, "Take courage." And thirdly, he says, "As you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem." I think he's basically saying, way to go. You have done a good job up to now. Don't stop now. Keep it up. Good job. Keep it up. We're not done yet. So get ready. Be of courage. I've got this, but be ready. As you've testified about the fact to me in Jerusalem, and then he gives him a word of promise. What has Paul been saying all along? I've got to go to Rome. I'm supposed to go to Rome. This can't end yet because I'm supposed to go to Rome. And what does Jesus say to him? You've got to testify about me in Rome. The stage of the entire world. You've got to testify to the most powerful man in the world. So I'm not done with you. I've got this. I'm going to give you that much. He didn't tell him anything about the stuff that's going to happen between. He didn't tell him about the shipwreck. No, by the way, let me tell you. You're going to be scared to death because you're going to have a shipwreck on the way and you're going to think you're dead. Okay? And you're going to get bitten by a snake and just kill you. And you're going to have some more people try to kill you. But he didn't tell him all of that. Thank God he doesn't give me all the details and go, now, be prepared because tomorrow some people are going to say some really nasty stuff about you. I'd be worried to death, man. I worry to death about what people say. But he says, just know I've got this. Step forward. As far as the headlights show, go on. And I'll show you more as you go. But he gives him this promise. You've got to testify to me in Rome. That's the very thing Paul wanted. Don't miss that. Paul had been saying all along, I want to go to Rome. I need to go to Rome. I'm supposed to go to Rome. And that'd be one thing if he's going, I just always wanted to visit Rome. Maybe that's part of what he's saying. But I think it's more, it's deeper. He's saying, I'm supposed to, I've got this big thing on me. I've got this thing from God, this conviction that that's what I'm supposed to do. Sometimes you can't explain it, but he's got this desire to do it. And God says, you know that thing you want to do most? You're going to do it. You got to do it. That word must is in there. It means necessary. It was necessary for him to go to Rome. That's one of the words that you see right there that jumps off at you, you know? It's necessary for you to go. In other words, it's going to happen. It's some of the same things that were said over and over through again in the New Testament. But it was a message of promise. You're going to do this, so don't lose heart. You know, when God tells you something's going to happen, you can go ahead and write the check. It's in the bank. Now, you might say, but I need some more details, God. I need you to tell me, how's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Who's it going to happen to? What, how will I know? When God says it, just say, yes. Thank you. Yes. I'm not saying you can't ask God to show you some things, but friend, the Lord speaks to us just the word you need to hear at just the right time. And he does that with Paul. He does it with us. And then I want you to see, read with me these last few verses here in this plot to kill Paul. To me, this is almost what makes it comical. When you stop and break it down, based on, I never thought about it this way, but based on what God just said to him, the next thing Luke tells us is, oh, and by the way, that's what Luke's kind of saying. These 40 yahoos who think they're so close to God really write out their death warrant by trying to stand against what God's doing in Paul's life. That's the way I interpret it. Read with me. When it was day, the Jews made a plot, and they bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. Paul's going to live for another good while. I think probably basically a couple of years from here, maybe even. He sits in Rome for quite a while. These men are dead if they keep their promise. Be careful about the promises you keep. I'm not going to eat or drink until I've killed Paul. And they think they're doing it for God. That's the thing. There were more than 40 who made this conspiracy. They went to the chief priests and the elders and said, we have strictly bound ourselves by an oath to taste no food till we have killed Paul. Now, therefore, you, along with the council, give notice to the tribune to bring him down to you as though you were going to determine his case more exactly, and we are ready to kill him before he comes near. Now, get this. What did God do? Did he strike him dead? Did he strike him blind? Did he bring in an army? A little boy, the son of Paul's sister, heard of the word that's used there makes it sound like he was basically a child. He could have been an older child, but a kid overheard it. Was in the right, you could say the wrong place at the right time. He was in the right place at the right time, depending on your perspective. Paul's sister, we don't even know about his sister. We don't even hear about these two people anymore that I can think of, but anybody I know finds. Paul's sister heard of the ambush. The son of Paul's sister heard of the ambush, so he went and entered the barracks. How in the world he has access to the prison, I have no idea. They were not what they were today. He might have slipped in through the bars and said, Paul, I just heard you need to know. We need to do something about this. And he tells Paul, and Paul called one of the centurions and said, hey, take this young man to the tribune, for he has something to tell him. So he took him and he brought him in the tribune to the tribune and said, Paul the prisoner called me and asked me to bring this young man to you, as he has something to say to you. Can you imagine him going, I don't know why, but this kid's got something really important. Paul wants you to hear it. So here he is. The tribune took him by the hand and going aside, asked him privately, what is this you have to tell me? And he said, and he kind of gets to get off his side, like, okay, son, it's all right, you're not in trouble. But tell me what it is, Paul. Tell me what you told him. You know, this has been great news. I love it. And the Jew, he says, and what is it you have to tell me? And he said, the Jews have agreed to ask you to bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire about something more closely about him. But do not be persuaded by them, for more than 40 of their men are lying in ambush for him, who have bound themselves by an oath neither to eat or drink until they killed him. And now they are ready, waiting for your consent. So the tribune dismissed the young man, charging him to tell nobody else, tell no one else, that you have informed me of these things. Now listen to the response here. Then he called two of the centurions and said, get ready, 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen. 470 man posse. Because one boy who just happened to be at the place to get the word of this thing. Probably coincidence, right? I mean, the fact that God just spoke to Paul and said, nothing's going to touch you. Probably just coincidence, right? No. It's God incidents. And I think he used a boy. He could have used a dog if he wanted to. You know, Lassie's in the, Timmy's in the whale kind of thing. That's some thoughts. He used a boy to humiliate. Here are 40 powerful men who are fixing to die if they keep their oath. Or either have to renege on their oath and realize we're not as powerful as we think we are. Who are humiliated in front of these leaders. Saying, what about your plan? You know what happened? He gets Paul out. He takes, sends him on down the road. What does he do? The government has just signed on with a posse of 470 men to get Paul safely one step closer to Rome, the place where God said he was going and where Paul said he wanted to go. But guess what? I'm going to give you an escort of 470. Now, that would be exactly what Paul was probably dreaming about when he did all this, right? Keep in mind, when you say, oh, this just can't work out good. This just can't. No, there's no way. There's no way this can work out good. No, I can't see any way out. Get ready. Check and make sure that your airbag is turned on, your seatbelt is on, and you are locked and ready because God is probably fixing to blow your mind and do something to make it clear that it was only God who could have done it. You couldn't dream up that kind of stuff. That's why the Bible is so believable. It's beyond the imagination of man. Even the way he brought his son into the world. Yeah, people just sitting around saying, I think you should do it this way. No! You would never do it that way. Nobody would. But God, and now, he's doing it with a kid? Really? Friends, the Lord keeps us in his secure will. Notice the word must here. It's necessary. Luke uses it about 22 times in Acts. The Lord uses those words, the same thing. The angel that appears in storm, and he tells Paul, you know, you must go. You must stand before Caesar. Over and over, that word's used that way to say, it's a done deal. It's going to happen. And so here, God does it through the small kid, and he gets this escort to have God's will accomplished in his life and then one step closer. You might be going through circumstances right now, and you don't see that God's anywhere around. But friends, be prepared. Don't you doubt for one second that he's there. Especially if you are making the commitment to try to do his will, not perfectly again, but the commitment to try to carry out his will and to let his will be done in your life. And that's a major, major factor. So I wanted to say one word about that. The Lord will keep us in his perfect will, is the way I chose to say it. And here's the key. In God's will. You don't have the same assurance in your mess. Yes, God is with us in our mess. Thank goodness he is. But it's different. It might be in discipline in the middle. I'm thankful for that. I am thankful that God has gotten my attention by knocking me off my horse a couple of times as I was running for the cliff. Running thinking I was doing it for him, thinking I was saving people, fixing people, whatever. And God had to knock me off my horse and go, wait a minute. You see what you're about to do? And I'm thankful for it looking back. Even though for those first 30 seconds I was going, what in the world is God doing? Maybe the first 30 days. Maybe the first 30 years of my life. But you know what? The key is in God's will. And you say, how in the world do I know that? Tell me if you find out. But I can point you to something. And two of the most important verses to me in the whole Bible, and they are to me personally, Romans 12, 1 and 2, where Paul is saying, I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God. If God has been good to you, then I'm appealing to you to present your bodies, your lives, as a living sacrifice. Don't be martyred for God, but living out this sacrifice, the sacrifice of our way for God's way, which is holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. This is the way you worship God, by living out that sacrifice of your life, your will for God's will, giving up your will to do God's will. Do not be conformed, squeezed into the mold of this world. Don't think it's going to be logical. Don't think you can reason it out. Don't think it's going to make sense to people around you. But to be transformed, changed into something completely different. Metamorphosis. Caterpillar to butterfly. Transformed by the renewal of your mind, the changing of the way of your thinking, by testing, and that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, which is good and acceptable and perfect. Have you lived long enough to have God show you through sometimes disappointment, through struggle, through hardship, that His will really is good and pleasing and perfect, not just to Him, but to you? Because I am so thankful that God is changing my desires and changing my perspective and my outlook and causing me to have to stop and say, Isaiah 55, 8, 9, God, I don't see how this is working, but my ways aren't your ways and my thoughts aren't your thoughts. So I need help here to see what you're doing, and I want to see it because I want to be in the center of your will. Because what I'm learning is the stuff that I think is what I really want and the stuff that I think will bring me joy really works in the opposite. They're joy robbers. They're peace robbers. These counterfeit comforters that I grab onto when I don't want to make the commitment to trust God, those things never work. They suck it out of my life. But I share with you again what John Piper said in the closing. God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in Him. And what I think that means is the greatest joy in my life, being that I don't know how to get joy my way, the greatest joy comes to my life when I'm most seeking God's glorious will. When I'm most seeking God to be glorified. When I'm most seeking what He wants, I know the joy. And friends, I'm telling you, with stuff that like we face in life and none of us are immune to, that's what's getting me through this thing right now with Kate. Say, I don't have a clue how. But there's a big bunch of joy in this. I do know that. Because we are going to be determined and committed, and she is, we are, to see God do glory through this. Now I have to say, as I've said to God, I hope it's this way, God. I'm praying it's this way. But at the same time, you're God. Your ways are not my ways. Truth is, God may come back next week, and it won't matter whether she's got cancer or not. He may come back this afternoon. Then again, He may show Himself in some glorious way, in a way that I don't know any more than that kid did. They're right in the center of God's will and God's plan for eternity. The same thing's true for our lives, friends. Let's just struggle. Let's work. Let's commit ourselves to being in the center of His will. Let's go.
Just to see. has been satisfied.